The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but 2015 was such a turbulent year. Terrorist attacks, political rivalry more vicious than ever, a president who seems to have no regard for our Constitution. Will God answer our prayers and deliver something better for 2016? Well, I can tell you one better thing right now. The Bob Siegel Show has been on the air for 11 years. Today starts the beginning of our 12th season. It's good to be back with you for our first live show of the year. I was on a Christmas hiatus the last couple of weeks with some repeat broadcasts, but we are back today. New show, old familiar theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today we'll key in more on politics and catch up with some news. I guess the biggest news. Now, if you're driving right now, you might want to pull over. We don't want to cause any accidents. Are you ready? GOP candidate George Pataki has dropped out. The kind of news that makes you fall out of your chair. I mean, this is the biggest thing since Lindsey Graham quit. But I'll tell you who isn't quitting. I am joined today by my good friend and co-host Matt Simone. Matt, welcome to our program.
Hi, Bob. How's it going?
It's good to see you. Did you have a nice holiday?
You know, Bob, I had a wonderful time. Stayed home together with family. It was great.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, someone else is having a good time, but for different reasons, is our president. It seems, Matt, that President Obama is like a kid in a candy store in the way he uses executive orders. He's certainly not the first president to use them, but he uses them like they're going out of style. Since you're an attorney, I'm going to ask you a question that I think I know the answer to, but then I'm not an attorney, so what do I really know? I thought you could educate our audience today. Where exactly does our Constitution justify executive orders, or does it, which would be the part I might want to emphasize, but I'll turn it over to you.
So you're going to defer to me on that one? Okay, so let's do something and bring it down to a simplest form. Let's talk about the Constitution itself. One of the great things about the United States Constitution is that it is so simplistic. It's very simple. And basically, instead of putting together a laundry list of do's and don'ts and stuff like a lot of modern Constitution does, it lays out a governing framework. And in that framework, it creates three branches, and those branches are equal in power. And that's where we got to start right off the bat, Bob, because what's going on today has to do with each one of those particular branches.
Well, it seems like Obama feels that he's the executive branch.
Yes, he is.
He seems to feel that the legislative branch exists to have first refusal on what he wants to do. And then if they don't want to go along with it, he'll do it. Whenever he gives a speech about what we could accomplish if the Republicans would just work with him, we know that around the bend, he's going to come out and go, well, I tried to work with them. They wouldn't do it, but I got a pen. I got a phone.
Just so everybody isn't confused, yes, the legislative branch is supposed to legislate, the executive branch is supposed to execute, and the judicial branch is supposed to adjudicate. Basically, that's the way it works. Yeah. It's supposed to work anyway. So to answer your first question, the Constitution and executive orders. Well, it is not defined in the Constitution, and it is not explicitly vested.
So where did that tradition develop?
Well, you know, it's really great. I mean, it comes wherever all our laws come from, Bob. It's a matter of
case law, precedent.
And such. So somebody's done it. Nobody had a problem with it. And it dates all the way back to our first.
Well, precedent. I had a problem with it. I guess I don't count.
Well, Well, you know what? So let's just take a look at executive orders, because I think the misnomer is we should probably define what they're supposed to be and what's supposed to actually happen.
Right.
In regard to it.
Because I would say that the closest thing to it would be that certainly during a time of a war, if the president's the commander in chief, he's got to be able to make some decisions. And I guess technically you could say that's like an executive order.
Yeah. And, you know, historically, if you look back, when there is an emergency, national emergency, wars and such, you know, basically the president's almost had limitless power.
It's got to be a real emergency, yes. Not one he creates to stay in power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly
correct. It can't be Emperor Palpatine promising to step down when the crisis is over.
Did he really promise to step down?
I don't know. I love democracy.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, so basically, the powers that the president have are in the Constitution from this standpoint, and it's called the executive powers, Article 2, Section 1, and Article 3, Section 3. And those basically come down to that he is given certain authority, and then he's supposed to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. So that's where it all starts.
But an executive order doesn't mean I'm creating a new law, which is what the way he's using
it. Well, technically, yes. An executive order, by definition, is basically this. It is basically policy and procedure that can be put into place by the head of the executive branch, which is the president, which gives direction to the employees of the federal government, the federal administrative agencies. And really, that is the only people it's supposed to affect. The president of the United States really has no authority directly over the individuals of the United States of America.
Well, somebody needs to enlighten him and give him this news, because he seems to think that he knows better than any of us, and he wants to tell us what to do.
Well, you know, it's really funny, though, that when you think about it, that we could talk about maybe a little bit later. A lot of things that would seem common sense that somebody would take some actions, it just doesn't ever happen. So, Bob, let's do this. Let's look at executive orders from this standpoint. So what is it that the president definitely can't do? And we're going to take a look at that our president probably has already done.
I have a feeling that this list of what he can't do and this list of what he has done are going to match.
Oh, well, you know what? There is always that possibility. So first of all, the president can't use an executive order to make law, because he is the executive branch,
so
and not the legislature.
So he can't decide to legalize all these immigrants where it specifically says in the Constitution that that's Congress's job. He's not supposed to be able to do that.
Well, not supposed to. So what he cannot do is he cannot implement policy. Okay, he is not granted the power to implement policy. He's not authorized by law to make laws. He can't violate laws that are passed by Congress. He can't delegate his executive powers to anybody else. And he can't suspend the enforcement of laws. I left that for the end, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Like with the illegal situation.
Yes. So those are the kind of things that he can't do, but they just seem to be happening in the executive order times. So
yeah, imagine that.
Yes. So I thought I would do now is I'd sort of give you a little history. And, you know, I'm going to give you guys a little clue about something that I was really curious to find, that among two-term presidents, President Obama has actually signed the fewest executive orders. I'm really surprised by that when I was going through this.
I would say that I'm surprised, but I'm guessing that it's the kinds of executive orders he's doing and not the, because I've heard people say, well, Bush signed even more, but the ones that Bush was signing didn't seem to be upsetting our way of life.
Yeah, quantity versus quality. So he's got the quality thing down. So basically right now where we stand is there have been over 13,000 numbered executive orders, dating all the way back only to Lincoln. Before that, they didn't have a really good letter.
Did it begin with the Civil War and the suspension of habeas corpus?
Yep, we'll talk about that. And so that was where the start, where they really started numbering these things. And that was around 1861. And so they actually started numbering. There were more executive orders than that. But the simple fact of the matter is there was poor record keeping. And they retroactively went back and they started laying these things down. So I started going historically through some executive orders that other presidents have actually used. So the very first executive order actually came from who, Bob?
Abraham Lincoln.
No, George Washington.
Oh, I thought you said that they They stopped with Lincoln.
Well, they started. Oh,
but you talked about
retroactive. They started the numbering, but the first executive order that was put
okay.
Together
so what you're saying is when Washington did it, it wasn't called an executive order.
Well,
he did something like that.
Yes, there was no such thing as an executive order because it's not the Constitution.
So they went back and called something he did.
Yes.
An executive order.
Right.
Okay. So what was it that Washington did?
Okay. So basically, what he did is he instructed federal officers to prosecute civilians. To not interfere in the war between England and France. So that was the very first executive order that happened. So after that, so I thought the next person, president, so I knew Bob had sort of likes this guy, and it's Abraham Lincoln. And so, just so you'll know too, when Washington executed that order, Congress wasn't in session.
Oh, really?
No, Congress wasn't in session.
Goodness.
So that was an interesting
question. That's interesting because Washington didn't seem to be a power-crazy person. He didn't even want the job as president originally. So he doesn't seem like the kind of person that would be motivated out of power. I would guess his motivation was a little more pure for
right,
that.
Right, right. And because he was worried about the country and how people were reacting at that time. So let's fast forward over to Abraham Lincoln. And so he issued his first executive order also when Congress was out of session. There's a trend going on here.
They were savvy men.
Yes, they were. And at that
point, of course, Obama doesn't care if Congress is in session or not. He loses no sleep over what Congress does.
Exactly. And so there was something in particular that happened at this particular time. So Abraham Lincoln's first executive order surrounded the fact of a gentleman named John Merryman, who was a militiaman. But the militia, what they were doing is they were attacking federal soldiers. So they pulled Merryman in, and he wanted him locked up and wanted him prosecuted. So this concept of habeas corpus is basically that everybody has a legal right to appear in court, and Lincoln basically suspended that, and he did not give him that opportunity.
Now, how do you feel about that? I have mixed feelings, because whereas I can understand Lincoln's reason for doing it, the precedent that started does seem kind of
Did
the Constitution say that you have the right to suspend habeas corpus under martial law?
No, it was only reserved right to Congress. Congress was the only one that could do that.
Could suspend habeas
corpus. But he decided to do that.
So during a time of emergency, even though the president's the commander-in-chief, only Congress can suspend habeas corpus.
Exactly.
And that's not the way we've been doing it.
But what we've been finding out that the courts and Congress have been giving presidents a lot of power once again during this wartime.
Okay, we'll be back with my guest and friend Matt Simone. Executive orders, how constitutional are they anyway?
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
No, that is not your imagination. You're still hearing Christmas bumper music, and you're still hearing it in January.
Love it.
Why did I extend it another week? Because I'm doing an executive order of my own. This is my radio show, and if I want to sign a darn executive order, I'll do so. No, it's actually a tradition on our program. I'd love to extend it into January and start it as early as November, just to make up for all the grief and heartache that the ACLU gives us by getting freaked out over manger scenes and court battles and just making our Christmas miserable. So to make up for that, I have taken the liberty of extending the Christmas season, and I hope it makes your Christmas just a little merrier. But someone who's not making our lives in the country merrier is President Obama, who loves these executive orders, and here to continue talking about the constitutionality or lack thereof of them is co-host Matt Simone.
Hey, just to take a little sidebar on this, it's funny you should mention that whole thing. I'm a high school wrestling coach, and so one of the things I lay down in our room is that I am a benevolent dictator. So I don't know. Maybe that's the way to go, Bob.
But see, in sports and in the military, there's places where we have to have that. Our country is supposed to be a democratic republic, and that is different.
Exactly. So, hey, so let me go back and refresh your memory. So we were talking about President Abraham Lincoln and the suspension of habeas corpus by way of an executive order.
Who had maybe a good reason.
Yeah. And,
but there's a precedent that's
right. And it was a power that was in given only to Congress in times of rebellion and invasion. But here's a curious thing. Lincoln explained himself to Congress. And in 18...
You mean after the fact? Yeah, because you said he did it when Congress wasn't in session.
They weren't in session, but he explained his actions. And in 1863, Congress actually passed the Habeas Corpus Act and gave him the power he assumed he had.
Oh, my goodness. So it's not in the Constitution, but Congress has made it legal nevertheless.
Exactly. So now it's in law.
Okay. So now what is this law that we now have then?
Okay. Well, the law is that if the president so choose, he could suspend somebody's ability to be able to have their accuser, okay, in a legitimate court of law, tell them what's going on.
Now, wait. Now, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Did Congress then... You know, we hear a lot about judicial activism, but was this a case of Congress passing an unconstitutional law?
Well,
because the Constitution says it's their power, then where do they get off deciding it's the president's power?
There you go, Bob. And that's how things work. And nobody contested it.
Can't
at the
these
time.
Pinheads just read the Constitution and stick with it?
Wasn't there something I said in a very good video about its simplicity?
Yes. So they're complicating it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's basically, the best...
Good one, Congress.
Yeah, there you go. So let's fast forward a little bit about a couple other presidents. And so we're going to go to the first president who really just went wacko with executive orders, and that was Teddy Roosevelt. He was the first president to break 1,000. He broke the 1,000 mark. Yeah.
They named the teddy bear after him, too. Teddy bear is named after Teddy Roosevelt.
And there you go. And I'll tell you what. So he was the first one. But Teddy Roosevelt's basically way of leading the country was, well, if there's no law and there's nothing saying I can't do it, I'm just going to go do it. And that's basically the way Roosevelt was.
Well, I don't like that either, but that's at least better than a president who says, regardless of the fact that there is a law saying I can't do it, I'm going to go ahead and do this.
Yes, exactly. So then let's move on then to the all-time champion, the all-time record holder at this particular time. It is Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who has issued 3,522.
I didn't like what he did with the Japanese internment camps.
Okay, and Bob, that was an executive order.
Yes.
But you know how that executive order started out, though? It really was not. One of the two major ones that FDR gave by executive order was he actually seized factories, mines, and other privately owned industrial facilities because it was during wartime and nobody stopped them. And then, like you said, he basically passed an executive order that was number 9066 that declared certain areas as military zones, and he expanded that to include the internments of Japanese Americans.
Now, I had heard, but I have not researched this, that there were some internment camps for Italians and Germans as well that we do not hear as much about. Is that...
You know, I don't know about that one, Bob.
I've heard, certainly not to the degree... Well, okay, it's something I heard and I have not, so... Don't take that to the bank, anybody. I'll have to research that a little bit.
Well, we could always check on that. Now, here's an interesting thing, though. So after FDR did this, now, I mean, you got to understand, America was just attacked by the Japanese at Pearl Harbor. So he expanded on this executive
order. And he could get away with it because there would have been a fear of the Japanese because of that.
Exactly. But here's an interesting thing. Congress passed a law right after that that was making it a federal offense to disobey the president's executive order.
Boy, Congress just doesn't have a great batting record with this subject, does it?
No. So here we go. You know, so when something gets out of control, these guys are sort of like giving it legitimacy. And so now you know where the precedent and such is coming from for these other presidents. Okay, so let's go back to another wartime president, and that would be Harry Truman. Now, one of the things that Truman did do that was a very good executive order was to integrate the armed forces. He was the first one to desegregate the armed forces.
Oh, that, yeah.
That was good. And then, but in 1952, he during the Korean War, he tried through the Secretary of Commerce to take possession of most of the nation's steel mills. He tried to take over the steel mills. And so
for wartime purposes?
Yeah, because there was a major strike going on. Right. People weren't getting paid, and he wanted to take over.
Well, you know, I could see them saying if we're in a time of war, this isn't a good time for people to go on strike. I mean, I guess I could see the tension in that one a little
but
bit.
But we're going to talk about it later. The judiciary got involved, and they didn't let him do it because it was a violation of his executive powers.
You mean occasionally the judiciary actually defends the Constitution instead of rewriting it?
Go figure. Yeah, go figure. Go figure. Okay.
I'm not really proud of any of these branches of government at this point, I have to say.
Well, Bob, it doesn't get any better. So let's go. Let's move on from Truman and let's go to Eisenhower. Eisenhower actually used an executive order to integrate.
E2, Ike? Yeah, E2, Ike?
Yeah,
Ike.
Yes. I like Ike. And he integrated and desegregated public schools. So he did that by way of an executive order.
Yeah, well, and see, and it's here's where we have to be careful where the slippery slope is, because when there's an executive order that we like,
yes,
or the 2020 hindsight tells us, we look back, well, of course they should have desegregated us. That's great. And yet, technically, it should have been Congress that did that.
Absolutely.
Because that wasn't his job. Even so, we might like what he did, but did he have the legal authority to do it?
But see, okay, so as we continue with these, one of the things you're going to find out that allows this executive order is that Congress a lot of time is silent or they don't implement it correctly or give details.
Yeah, and they're wusses sometimes too, like our present Congress. We'll be right back.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
The verdict is in on Bob Siegel's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Readers love it, and they say as much in their customer reviews. Reviews such as this one. Like the Chronicles of Narnia in the last century, the story is fun and mysterious, appropriate for adults as well as kids, and should become a classic. I won't even give any spoilers, but I will say that I couldn't put it down. It makes a point without being preachy. There are twists and turns and a great ending. Like the title object, the story challenges your thinking without leaving you in despair. This book would make an excellent Christmas gift for yourself or others, and it can be enjoyed at any time of the year. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel on 1170 The Answer. With co-hosting the show today is my good friend Matt Simone.
Well, Bob, we're going to continue with some of the other presidents that have issued some executive orders. And you made a really good point, Bob, that there's this slippery slope with these executive orders. But then eventually, sometimes Congress does get it right. For example, Kennedy and Johnson, they used executive orders to bar racial discrimination in federal housing, hiring, and contracting. And then the government eventually, you know, Congress got it together and followed up in suit and made sure it was done correctly.
And I'm glad that they're following suit, but it just still seems so dangerous that one person can just take out his pen and make all these things happen.
Well, yeah, then that's it. But that was the last point I was actually making before the break was, it comes down to the simple fact of the matter is, you know, if you don't tell somebody what they can do, they can do anything.
Yeah, there's a line from one of my favorite plays called The Man for All Seasons, based on the true story of Henry VIII. And somebody talks to the king's advisor in that movie and stage play both, and he says, never tell the king what he can do, only tell the king what he should do.
Yes.
And yet in this case, it's not just what the king should do, it's what the Constitution says he can't do, and he does anyway.
Well, you know, unfortunately, what we have is a situation even then and today is they are trying to create policy. They're trying to influence people. They're trying to affect you and me, Bob, when the president's not really supposed to have any effect over us.
Yeah,
well, because he doesn't make laws.
During our last midterm election, he went up and said, even though I'm not running, my policies are running.
Yes.
And then his policies took quite a beating. The Republicans took back Congress. And what does he do? He goes the very next day, he doubles down and signs this executive order legalizing all these people. Just completely ignoring not only Congress, but ignoring the fact that the will of the people had just been heard.
Right. Well, let's continue with some other presidents then. Okay, so here's one of our favorites, President Reagan. He actually used an executive order to bar the use of federal funds for advocating abortion. He did that. And then right after that, President Clinton came in and he reversed it.
But then Clinton doesn't mind using federal funds to fund abortion, though.
That's, yes, yeah, exactly. Only, yeah. And so let's talk
about... You gotta love the consistency.
Let's talk about Bill. So Bill signed over 300 executive orders. One of them, he designated 1.7 million acres of southern Utah as a national monument. I mean, out of the clear blue sky, just took...
I thought you were going to tell me it was a national brothel.
Oh, okay, Bob, hold off on that. I don't have any evidence to prove that. Okay. And I've been
using executive orders for years.
And he himself actually fought the war in Yugoslavia under an executive order without Congress approval. So it's interesting.
Well, that gets tricky, too, because if they don't technically call it a war, they can still wage war. But, yeah.
And he is the commander in chief. So let's jump forward to our current president.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, so on the very first day that President Obama came into office, he signed three executive orders on the very first day. The first one was banning the use of enhanced interrogation techniques like waterboarding, and he instructed the CIA and the armed forces to strictly follow the interrogation procedures outlined in the Army Field Manual.
Oh, brother. Who wrote that one? Barbara Walters?
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's probably been around since like the 50s or something like that. You know, they never had to worry about terrorists.
Barbara's interrogations. If you could be a twee, what kind of twee would you be?
Yeah. Along with it, number two was, and probably the most controversial one, was the closure of Guantanamo Bay, which we know never happened.
Well, although it's starting to happen now.
Yeah.
So they say.
Right. And then the last one, he created a task force designated to review detention policies and procedures. That's it. Okay. Well, then let's go forward now. So we're in now spring of 2012. President's got his groove on. He's just like feeling really good about himself and such. And he issued executive orders to combat what he viewed as an intricatable Congress. He said that they were, I guess, constipated and they couldn't get anything passed.
Well, yeah, they are not bipartisan. Bipartisan, of course, being defined as doing things his way.
Exactly. And so he pulled a campaign together that was called We Can't Wait. And he started bringing about executive orders for tougher regulations on greenhouse emissions, revamped deportation policies, better education and employment options for returning troops. So some of it wasn't all bad, but he really started to get his flexing, his muscle to basically influence law at that
particular time. And every time he's given a little bit of a leeway, then that kind of emboldens him to try more because he's throwing out trial balloons and seeing what the public will go for.
You know, so really, when we look back at all this stuff, there's really no line draw, you know, of what presidents can do and they can't do. But the Supreme Court all the way back in 1935 said the president must obey the law. Go figure.
Wow, the Supreme Court got that one right.
And he has no authority under the Constitution to suspend the enforcement of law.
Okay, now would this Supreme Court say something like that?
Oh, man.
Where several of them are appointed by him?
Well, you know, it just depends on what day, I guess which side of the bed Kennedy got on. Yeah. So, because, I mean, that's what it's going to come down to in regard to that. So, like I mentioned, so the real problem we have a lot of times with executive orders, not clearly defined in the Constitution, not really vested in the Constitution. It's sort of, you know, very, you know, up in the air. It really falls to Congress to do a much better job to when they make a law, how they want it carried out and the details. If not, it gives the executive branch a lot of leeway in which temple.
Well, now, when you talked about this law that back in the 30s, yes, the Supreme Court passed, it said the president has to obey the law.
Yeah.
Could it be so argued that that countermands the law that Congress made where they finally, Congress did decide that the president could suspend habeas corpus without them, or would that not be interpreted that way?
Well, you know what? The only way a law gets changed, okay, is if Congress does it, amends it, repeals it, or modifies it, or the Supreme Court speaks to it, Bob.
Right. So did the Supreme Court speak to that one?
Nope.
They did. Okay. Because nope. Because it was a different case on their books.
Yep.
So even though we may see that it should apply, they won't count it as technically applying if it was a different case that went up through the court system.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, some things are what we call in law not always on point. So let's take a look back. So remember we started this whole conversation with these three branches of government. So let's talk about checks and balance in regard to this, because it seems like these the president and executive orders are sort of out of control.
Okay, we will do some checks and some balances when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker, Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Executive orders from a radio talk show host who extends Christmas, not so bad. Executive orders from a power-hungry mongrel president, bad. Welcome back, Matt Simone.
Okay, Bob. So let's get into the old checks and balances that's supposed to work in the United States of America under the Constitution. So let's start right at the top and let's look at that executive branch. Well, we have these executive orders. You know what? The president can freely revoke, modify, or supersede any executive order he issues or from a predecessor, which happens most of the time.
And I guess in a sense, that's maybe not the kind of check and balance our forefathers wanted, but maybe it's what we're left with, that at least somebody else could come along and get rid of it.
And the real issue why that happens more times than not, Bob, is we're going to go to the legislative branch. What can the legislative branch do in regard to these executive orders? Well, hey, what they can do is they can revoke them. They can modify them. They can rewrite them. And matter of fact, they can give you more specific detail as to how the executive branch is supposed to implement them.
If they're not losing sleep over the New York Times editorial page the next morning or being called partisan and they have some guts and some courage, then they can do that.
And so all they have to do is take away the president's underlying authority to act and it goes away. But here's the real problem. When I did some research, there's only 4% of executive orders that have ever been modified by Congress. And the reason is, okay, if they do something by way of law, the president has the opportunity to veto.
Right. And I think that's good because that is check and balance.
Yes.
He can veto, but then they can go back and override his veto.
Two-third majority, nobody ever gets.
See, and I think that kind of check and balance is healthy.
Yes. And I think that's a great thing. But that's one of the problems why maybe only 4% have ever been modified, because you can do something, president vetoes it. Have we ever had a Congress where that was two-thirds from one?
That's a good question. Have we ever had a case like that?
I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe we have, but none that come to my mind.
Yeah, I can't either. And so then we have our favorites. It's the judiciary.
Yeah, they are more and more becoming my least and least favorite. But although now, Obama's given them a good run for their money, I must say.
Okay. And so the judiciary could actually put limitations on the president in regard to executive orders. So we're going to go back to Truman. So remember when I told you that Truman...
With the steel mill.
So the guys that owned the steel mill, guess what? They sued, and it made it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Now, how long did that lawsuit take? Because it seems to me that sometimes the president could say, by the time this makes it up through the courts, I'll be out of here anyway, yeah. So who cares?
Well, it didn't take that long.
Oh, well, good.
No, it didn't take that long at that time. And basically, the courts ruled that it was a violation of his duties under the Constitution, and it was a violation of the separation of powers doctrine.
Good for them. That's what I like, seeing our courts do what the Constitution says they should do.
And basically, one of the justices, Jackson, actually came up with an analysis that the courts are supposed to use in regard to executive orders, and it falls into three simple categories. Is there express or implied authorization? Well, that sort of makes sense. If the Constitution says it or a law says it, that makes a whole lot of sense. The other one is there this zone of twilight, they call it. And basically, is he acting on his independent powers, or did Congress not say anything, therefore giving the ability? Or last but not least, like this Youngstown case, was, hey, you're out to lunch, buddy. You have no express or implied authority here, so you're gone. So let me just bring up one other case because it involves our current president. And in 2014, there was a case. It was called Texas versus the United States. And after the president had brought all this immigration reform supposedly to the House and nobody could get anything passed, he signed an executive order that was called Deferred Action for Parental Arrivals. And it would have allowed 5 million illegal immigrants to stay for 3 years, a stay on deportation, and they would be granted work permits if they were parents of U.S. citizens or legal permanent resident children. But it was struck down by the courts. Can you believe it?
The Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Supreme Court actually struck down, saying it was a unilateral change to the immigration law.
Now, he's done another immigration law since then, though, that one has not yet been struck down by the courts.
And we can talk about that.
It's going up through the courts.
Yeah,
right now.
And we can talk about that. Now, here was the interesting thing. So you talk about arrogance. One of the reasons that the court ended up striking down this particular law was President Obama, like a couple days before the ruling and the oral arguments were being made, he came out and said, he was being heckled, and he said, hey, don't you understand? I'm changing law. And he came out of his mouth, and the courts used that.
Oh.
And when they brought it up to his the people that were defending it, they were just absolutely speechless and had nowhere to go with it because he said with his own mouth, hey, I'm trying to change law.
What was the decision by? What was the vote?
It was actually 6-3.
6-3. Yeah. So I'm assuming that Sotomayor and Kagan still went along with the president.
And Ginsburg. Yeah, were the ones that sort of went along with that. So those were, currently the Supreme Court has gotten some things right in regard to executive orders. But there's other ones that he's, you know, things that the president has done that sort of trampled the Constitution. We could take a look at some of those too, Bob, if you want to.
Well, I want to, Matt. That's why I brought you on today.
Okay, Bob, let's go about this. Well, remember we were talking about that the president can't suspend a law? Oh, there's that whole thing I've called about the Affordable Care Act. Do you remember that part?
It was the business section. It was his own law because the parts that were unpopular, he'd suspend. And then, what a nightmare.
Yeah, and in this particular case, the one part that he suspended was in regard to businesses. When you employed more 50 or more people, you had to provide them health insurance. So he basically said, not going to do that. Let's give it a little bit more time, which was obviously in violation of the Constitution and statutes because he has to implement laws,
right?
And he cannot suspend.
Well, this is where I think our Supreme Court sold us down the river too, and Chief Justice Roberts really let the conservatives down because they were also violating the Commerce Clause, if I'm not mistaken. And then they went in and argued that it was meant to be a tax, and that's how the Supreme Court went along with it. But to sell it and ram it down the throats of Congress, he was swearing up and down a totem pole that it was not a tax.
Exactly. So talking both sides of their mouth, they argued it actually that it was not a tax. When they found they were failing, they said, it's a tax. Oh, yeah, you can do that.
Did we say it wasn't a tax? We meant it was a tax, of course.
Yeah. I'm wondering if anybody pulled the records from that. There's a court reporter there. Somebody could have looked at that. I don't know what happened at that particular time. So let's take a look at some other stuff. Let's take a look about the DREAM Act. That was 2012. Homeland Security under Janet Napolitano issued a directive to immigration offices instructing them to defer deportation proceedings against an estimated 1.7 million illegal aliens in the United States.
Yes, and of course, we're not allowed to say illegal aliens. They're undocumented workers. We're supposed to be politically correct.
Bob, that's what it said.
Well, that's what it actually said. Well, also, Janet Napolitano was being politically incorrect. There you go. All right, we'll be right back.
This is Bob Siegel. Look, I admit it. I'm not tech savvy at all, but at least I'm savvy enough to know how to keep technology working for me. Even as a writer and radio talk show host, two careers far more related to the arts and the sciences, I am on my computer all day long. That means I need a computer that behaves itself. So when I do encounter problems, I call BitLogic. BitLogic can repair your personal computer. They also offer IT consulting for your small business. Is your computer doing something weird that you couldn't even begin to describe, let alone fix? Or maybe you're looking ahead, wanting to keep your small business systems running smoothly. BitLogic can help. Find them online at bitlogicit.com or call them at 619-333-6873. That's bitlogicit.com or 619-333-6873. Right now, mention the Bob Siegel Show and receive a 10% discount off any service. Got complex problems? BitLogic has simple solutions. How's that for making the obvious obvious?
This is Dana Ray, a reoccurring co-host on the Bob Siegel Show, here to tell you about Bob's latest novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. What kid could resist the chance to wish for anything he wanted, even if he knew he was flirting with certain danger every single time he made the wish? 12-year-old Mike Owens has received a special present from his eccentric Aunt Lorene, a magic Christmas ornament. The ornament functions as a kind of Aladdin's lamp, but with a unique twist. Each time Mike's wish is granted, something bad happens to a person who is with him at the time the wish was spoken. This, of course, sets up a chain reaction of trouble and adventure. Weighing his own desires against the consequences to those around him, Mike learns a valuable lesson about choices and personal responsibility while experiencing a nonstop adventure with extremely unusual turns. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Talking about executive orders today with my good friend and co-host Matt Simone.
Well, Bob, we started the show with the Constitution of the United States of America, a great document, which really one of our Supreme Court justices, Ruth Ginsburg, thinks that the rest of the world should not use as an example.
We should use Egypt,
yeah,
because they're so good on human rights in Egypt.
Can you imagine that? But one of the things that our forefathers had was the foresight that I guess they knew things were going to have a little consternation down the way. So what they did is they created the Bill of Rights that they thought were implicitly guaranteed in the Constitution. And what we're going to look at right now is how maybe the president and his administration have violated some of those Bill of Rights.
And you know what I like about the Bill of Rights is it's not a list of things we can do. It's a list of things the government can't do to interfere with our lives.
Exactly. And so let's start with the First Amendment, and we're talking about free speech. Does anybody remember the IRS and the way they dealt with those 501c4 organizations that were trying to, the Tea Parties?
Yes. Yeah, to kind of sway the election a little bit.
Right. They were trying to get tax-exempt status.
Yeah, well, I breathed a sigh of relief when I knew that Obama's Justice Department was going to handle the case, because I was up all night wondering how that was going to turn out.
Yeah. Well, I can't say who, we really don't know at this particular time who implemented that strategy, but the scene.
I would take a wild guess and say President Obama, but they didn't leave a paper trail, I'm sure.
I could neither confirm or deny that, Bob, but we do know that they had difficulty getting their tax exempt status, which would be a violation of the First Amendment.
And you know, whenever these things come out, he says he's shocked, he's going to look into it. A couple months later, we're looking into it, so we can't talk about it. A couple months later, it was all a Republican conspiracy. That's his pattern with every one of these things.
Well, you know what? They're letting him get away with it.
You know what's going to happen to Hillary with these email scandals?
Nothing.
Because I don't care what the FBI finds. It's the Obama Justice Department. I'm sure she sat him down saying, if I go down, you go down with me. Because we were both kind of negligent the night of Benghazi. I'm sure she's not going to jail.
Would that be a great read or what, Bob?
To have been a fly on the wall in that room.
Yes.
Sit down, Barry. I want to talk to you a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, who's not going to make this call? So let's go to one of my favorite amendments, and that's the Second Amendment, the ability for us to have arms in our gun laws.
Yeah, Obama doesn't seem to like that amendment a whole lot.
Yeah, he sure really doesn't like that, and he tried, even though with the help of his own party, hasn't been able to push any legislation through.
But that doesn't matter when executive orders fly in like Mighty Mouse to save the day.
Absolutely, and like you heard at the beginning of this show, right before we came on, he's going to get together with Loretta Lynn and figure out what they can do by way of executive order.
The meeting of two scholarly, fair legal minds. Can't wait.
Yes. A constitutional professor and a head of the Department of Justice.
I'm really open here, Loretta. I want to make sure I'm following the law, and I need some guidance from you, because if you tell me not to do this, I won't do this. But I do want to remind you that I'm the one that appointed you.
Absolutely. Yeah, your job is dependent on it. So let's go over to the Fourth Amendment, which does not allow unreasonable search and seizures. And now we have one of those situations where they started using the National Security Agency to start searching phone calls and phone records.
They also did an interesting thing not long ago that's gotten very little press, and that's that the FCC has made the internet a public utility.
Yes.
Which means they now have a say as content. I just don't think that one's caught up with all of us yet.
Yes. So are they going to be collecting data on U.S. citizens? Yes. And they will continue to do that. Yeah, there's a storage facility in Utah that's like 1 million square feet that's supposed to house all these servers and stuff for this stuff. So let's go on to the Fifth and Sixth Amendment, which is basically due process rights. And this one was in particular, this one had to do with U.S. citizens who were killed overseas in Yemen by drone strikes because they were supposedly suspected terrorists. Never had the opportunity to prove it, but those drones got them.
So that's kind of a suspension of habeas corpus type of thing.
Yep, exactly. And so that was having to deal with the Fifth and Sixth Amendment. The Seventh Amendment, the right to trial. Interesting, the president is having problems with Guantanamo Bay. And at this particular time, he thought that non-citizens should have a right to a jury trial.
Yeah, so citizens don't have a right to not be hit by a drone, but non-citizens have all kinds of rights.
Yeah, so much for your due process rights.
Citizens have a right to a driver's license, to be able to go and vote without showing ID. Non-citizens have all kinds of rights.
Yeah, but in this particular case,
if I become a disgruntled enough citizen, I'm going to renounce my citizenship because theoretically I'll get all kinds of rights if I do that.
No, you may be better off if we could do that. Let's go someplace else. Let's go someplace else and come back to the United States and find out what they'll give us. So that was the Seventh Amendment. The Eighth Amendment that had to do with cruel and unusual punishment. And that was where, remember when the Rand Paul was filibustering?
Right.
And because the Obama administration wanted to use drones again on U.S. soil, on U.S. citizens.
Hey, does 8 years under Obama constitute cruel and unusual punishment?
You know what? If it doesn't, I don't know what does, Bob. You know, I swear, I'm in constant angst every time I find out what the president has done.
Oh, every time he opens his mouth and gives another speech. Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know what? But the only good news about that, it seems like it doesn't change. They just changed a couple words and it's the same kind of. It's the same kind of.
They're probably using the same model teleprompter. They haven't gotten Obama 5.0 yet.
5.0. Good. Okay, and then we have the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, which should have most of America up in arms because this talks about the limitations on the federal government. So if the federal government doesn't have rights, the states are supposed to do stuff. But, I mean, they've talked about it's health care, environmental restrictions, marriage. These are all kinds of issues that should be in the state.
Well, that would get us up in arms, but because they're getting rid of the Second Amendment, there are no more arms.
Are no more arms. Obviously, Bob, you don't know me. I am a card-carrying member of the NRA. So, not yet. So, the backlash with the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, these powers that should be reserved to the states, they're all going away and they're just being trampled on.
We can't make too little of an issue out of that because we were really supposed to be a confederacy of different countries working together for... States were supposed to have like the sovereignty of a separate country, with the exception of certain co-opted things like the military that we were going to do together.
Right, because the idea was it was we the people.
That's
we
right.
the people would decide what we wanted our state to look like,
right.
and we were free to govern,
That's
put
right.
people into office. And
the only state that seems to take that seriously anymore is Texas.
Yes.
things get really bad. I never thought I'd want to move to Texas, but does not have California's topography. But it has one feature that makes it a little better than California. Sacramento
does not exist
in Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. No Jerry Brown or Sacramento.
Yeah.
So, Bob, that is some of the things that the president has done, violations of Constitution and such. So, Bob, you brought up a good question when we're off the air. Where do we go from here?
Well, let me ask you, what do you think Obama, we only have a very short period of time. What do you predict for this president? Is he going to step down or is he going to sign an executive order keeping himself in office?
Well, you know what?
Because of some emergency.
Well, I'll tell you right now is that based on the actions that he has taken, it could be a conspiracy theory that's been floating around forever. But you know what? He is not protecting our country. He is not taking terrorism seriously. So if something bad would happen...
And he doesn't have to create it happening.
Nope.
All he has to do is be the spineless president he's been, and it'll happen anyway. A bad conspiracy theory talks about things done in secret. This president's done so much in the open. I don't even know if I'd call it a conspiracy theory. I at least think he's thinking about it.
Well, to do nothing is to do something.
Yeah.
And he's doing nothing, so he's doing something.
Yeah.
And I'm on board with that, Bob.
Can't predict the future, but this guy's ego, I can't believe he's not at least thinking about it. Well, here's what you can think about. Think about joining us next week for the Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.